Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, joined by my longtime great friend and longtime college football analyst, also a longtime voter for the Heisman Trophy, the one, the only, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, we've got hoops tonight, man. We've got that SEC-ACC challenge with some very, very interesting matchups, but we're going to be football predominant, as you might guess. We've got the college football playoff. Latest rankings have been revealed just in the last hour or so, Brent. We've got Alabama, Georgia set again for the SEC championship. And Lord knows, we got Lane Kiffin in Baton Rouge. Finally put that one to rest. And a lot of coaching news around the league too, Brent.
It's just an amazing time of year. And the coaching news kind of extends the news cycle somewhat. Obviously tonight did with the reveal of what's going on. So it's just an amazing time. And Trav, I'm not going to say no one's paying attention to it, but this tells you how much things have changed. And this is a discussion really on another day. But we have early signing period this week, which normally would be held like a holiday. But I tell you, that really shows us how much this has changed over the years. I mean, you, in the early stages of recruiting, you had your own magazine for a while. You and I have done recruiting for years and years. But frankly, right now, with recruiting is taking a back seat to a lot of other things. I'm not saying that it's not important, because it certainly is, as the schools replenish. But I really do wonder, particularly after you see what happened tonight, if the early signing period will be moved again, probably at sometime maybe later in January or something akin to that.
Yeah, and how do you deal with the playoff in relation to all that? Yes. How do you make that work? It's a very, very crowded, convoluted time. There's no doubt about it. Made even more complicated by all the coaching changes that we've seen around the Southeastern Conference and elsewhere. As for the college football playoff rankings, interesting tonight that the Alabama Crimson Tide moves ahead of Notre Dame.
Yes.
And so you've got Oklahoma there potentially with Alabama in an 8-9 game. Now we'll see how things play out in Atlanta coming up this Saturday for the Alabama Crimson Tide in that matchup with Georgia. I would think either way, I'd be surprised if Alabama's at 9. If they win the game, they certainly aren't going to be at 9.
Yeah.
But if they lose the game, you know, where do they go? That's the big question, obviously, for Alabama at this point. It's hard to figure with this committee, because it doesn't seem like this committee's really valued wins all that much. So Alabama gets a win over a 5-7 Auburn team. And I had no faith in this committee to go beneath the surface a little bit with Auburn. Yes. But when you do that, and I'm not saying Auburn is, you know, 95 Nebraska or anything like that. But the losses for Auburn have all been pretty much, right? Extremely competitive.
Yes.
Georgia, games like that, Oklahoma, earlier in the season, all very close, hotly contested games. So maybe this committee did a little bit of its due diligence in that regard, but it's a fascinating possibility coming up this weekend in Atlanta, depending on that outcome and how it could impact the league and its presence in this college football playoff.
And another difficult team that Auburn lost to was Vanderbilt. And some people are saying, well, Vanderbilt, what are Travis and Brent talking about? Well, Vanderbilt in the latest rankings are 14. And Trav, what that tells us is if the rankings were, and I think they will be next year, extended to 16, well, your Vanderbilt Commodores would likely be in. And the truth of the matter is, Vandy has a real argument. I mean, Texas is 13. I know Texas won, but I'm also aware that Vandy scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. And we're an onside kick away from maybe really playing for the whole thing. But fascinating to see what how things came out. And again, something we've talked about, Notre Dame not being in a conference is not involved in a championship game. So, and let's be honest about this, Alabama and Notre Dame are two of the teams that carry the biggest ratings of anybody. Don't think that's not figured into this situation. But, yes, Bama jumped them, and they will play the number three-ranked Georgia Bulldogs. So, and even if they lose a close game to Georgia, I don't see them falling if that is the case.
Yeah, it almost felt like tonight they were going ahead and getting you ready for Alabama being in the college football playoff,
I think,
regardless
so.
Of what happens Saturday. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're 10th instead of 9th that they lose. But in the field now, there are some sort of catastrophic scenarios, I think, for Alabama and the SEC. If the Crimson Tide doesn't beat Georgia, and if Alabama beats Georgia, does the league have a, I guess they would have a top four seed with a conference champion based on the rankings. But, if you're an Alabama fan, what you really don't want to happen is BYU beating Texas Tech.
Yes.
All likelihood, because I think Texas Tech's got house money right now, regardless of what happens in the Big 12 championship game. But if BYU wins that game, and BYU gets in along with Texas Tech, that's kind of the scenario you'd rather not see happen if you're the Southeastern Conference. So, Brent, let's before we get into the coaching stuff, let's talk about how we've gotten here for this matchup between the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Georgia Bulldogs. We saw these two teams earlier in the season in Athens, very competitive game. Alabama pulls out the field goal difference win at Sanford Stadium. A lot of things have happened since that point, but we're still getting these two teams together one more time. But just from this last weekend, in terms of what happened with Texas A&M and falling to the Texas Longhorns in Austin, that game surprised me how it flipped in the second half. Understanding the game was in Austin, but still it looked like it was going pretty much according to plan. If you're Texas A&M, what a 10-3 game at the half. Yeah. A&M's defense just looking like, wasn't going to give up much on the ground, was going to be problematic for Arch Manning in that pass rush. But, boy, that Texas run game in the second half, and Arch was a big part of that. But with Trey Wisner, I didn't see that coming in the second half, but it did. And with that, Texas sort of rolled the Aggies there in the third and fourth quarters.
I think the thing we saw there too, Trav, is – the maturation of Arch Manning at quarterback. Look, he's probably not what he's going to be before he leaves Texas, but at the same time, he has gotten better and he has grown. You mentioned the running game. I think the Texas defense really showed out somewhat in that game. And by the way, in the latest college football rankings, Texas is 9-3 and number 13. So it really shows you, or does that tell us, Trav, the Longhorns may have been what, one win away from being in the thick of this thing themselves?
No doubt. And if you're Vanderbilt, you didn't like seeing that.
No, not at all.
You didn't like seeing the Longhorns, and understandably so. But, you know, I thought Sark in the post game did exactly what Sark had to do in trying to make any kind of case for his team. But it just feels like Texas feels like one of those 9-3 teams from a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Those 3-9-3 teams that you had, Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. You felt like any of those three could be in that playoff and have a chance to do something, at least in the early rounds. None of the three got in, and it kind of feels like that's where Texas is going to find itself when it's all said and done. But for A&M, it was a drop down to 7 tonight.
Yes, yes.
Which still keeps them in that home game scenario for a first round. But that's a pretty big difference between a first round bye altogether and then playing in the first round. And in that situation, if they are 7th, they could see Notre Dame again. There's the potential for rematches, a lot of rematches based on these rankings. I mean, you could have 8-9 with Oklahoma, Alabama. Mm-hmm. You could have 7-10 with Texas A&M and Notre Dame. So those are the sort of matchups that you could be seeing there with SEC teams predominantly. You're talking about Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Alabama, three of those four teams.
Well, and also, Trav, you've got the Ole Miss situation. Mm-hmm. Could Ole Miss be – I mean, they shouldn't, but could Ole Miss be penalized somehow by the committee? And I think they would probably say, no, we're not going to do that for losing their coach.
I thought that may show up tonight, but it doesn't really look like it did. I think if that were going to be the case, Ole Miss might have found itself below – Texas A&M.
Yes.
And instead you had Ole Miss still at 6 and A&M dropping to 7 there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But you know, as you look at the rankings in the top 10, I mean, Trav, you and I have been covering this sport since frankly the early 70s and 80s, and to see, and I'll be brief about this, but to see like Indiana number 2, Texas Tech number 4, Oregon number 5. Now Oregon's been certainly a tick better than they ever have. But does it still amaze you when you really look at the rankings about how some of these teams were in that we would have never seen years ago?
It does, but then, you know, I start to think about it and I go back to when Petrino had it going at Louisville, 25 years ago, and Jim Grobe had it going at Wake Forest.
Yeah, really.
Was it Leavitt at South Florida that had it going pretty good? Rich
sure
Rod
did.
The first time around at West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. It has a sort of surreal feel to it with some of these teams, but when I think back over the years, it seems like there's always been one or two teams that kind of fit that mold. It does feel like, though, in the last couple of years, we've had more of that. We got little Joe C chiming in here in the show chat. He offers up a hearty hello. Little Joe, good to hear from you on a Tuesday night as we're live here on Ryer on YouTube. If you'd like to chime in via the show chat, we would love to hear from you as well. Brent, so again, getting back to what we're expecting to see on Saturday, it's also a couple of football teams unfortunate in some ways because they both have their issues from a health perspective. They're both showing the effects of the 12-game schedule that they've already endured. And I think for Georgia, it starts now with Drew Bobo.
No doubt.
At the center position, the injury against his latest injury, he had a laceration to his arm going into the game against Tech last Friday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, leaves that game against the Yellow Jackets with a foot ankle type of injury. Doesn't sound very promising for him on Saturday. And that's a blow to Georgia because they were just really starting to get all their guys together for an extended stretch and starting to maximize that potential, not only as a group, but how it impacted that run game as well. That was a surging area. And in the second half or after Bobo's injury against Tech, that run game just didn't seem to have the same pump or thump to it.
And listen, I give Bobo credit for his toughness. I mean, he had a hand injury that he played through against Mississippi State, the foot injury in the first half of Friday's game. Travis and I aren't doctors, and we hope that maybe Trav, he could be back at some point if the Dawgs go deep enough in the playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt. He ended up being that really stabilizing presence throughout the season. Yes. He was about the only guy that week in and week out, Stacy Searles and Papa Mike Bobo could really sort of lean into. And now, you know, you've had some other injuries that have cropped back up. I think Ernest Green, the tackle, is still working through some in and out with that offensive line. So some of those things rearing their head once again for the Georgia Bulldogs. Sounds like Chauncey Bowens, the running back, didn't play against Tech, but should be able to go, or it sounded that way based on Kirby Smart's latest comments in regards to his injury. He had that big explosive run against Alabama, maybe a couple of them the first time around. So he would be a welcomed re-addition to go along with Nate Frazier, Josh McCray, really strong backfield. And then for Alabama, the center position, likewise, with Parker Brailsford. He was kind of a in and out guy himself against Auburn on Saturday in the Crimson Tide's win at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I thought Geno Vandermark, reserve, who works at both guard and center, did a serviceable job, did about as well as you could have hoped. Yes. Geno Vandermark is why you had these sort of under the radar portal additions on a yearly basis, especially where offensive lines are concerned, because he's not an all conference guy, not an all American, but he's a swing guy who can help you at guard. He can help you at center, not going to be an all American, but he's been beneficial to Chris Kapilovic and that Alabama offensive line and what he's able to do here these last couple of weeks.
Try to have a couple of guys on both teams. C.J. Allen for Georgia, the linebacker, got hurt about 2 weeks ago against Texas. Now, he played against Tech, but he wasn't that effective. But look, there are – Trav, would you say there are guys, and Allen will be one of them, that even though he may not be as productive as he normally is, just to have a guy like that on the field means something, does it not?
Yeah, he is a presence. And Raylan Wilson is a thumper in his own right at the linebacker position. I thought the first go-around, Ryan Grubb did a really nice job of slowing those guys down with formations and shifts. And getting them outflanked, you know, keeping them out of their comfort zone, which for C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson, I think for any inside linebacker, they want to play between the numbers. They want to play between the hashes. You start getting them, you know, messing with their eyes and different things like that. They don't enjoy that as much. So you saw it, too, with what Auburn was able to do against Alabama, really got after Ty Simpson in that Iron Bowl on Saturday. Georgia's not really built the same way. I don't see Georgia at the edge positions being as dynamic as, you know, what Auburn is able to go with their couple of guys, including Falk. Adkins at the linebacker position is basically like another pass rusher, the way they blitz with him, the way DJ Durkin just dials him up consistently in those 6 and 7 man pressures. Kirby's not as blitz prolific traditionally or historically as maybe we saw from DJ Durkin this year. So that chess game with what does Kirby maybe take from Auburn's plan? But some of it also has to do with the personnel you have. And right now there's not necessarily a Trayvon Walker for Georgia, Mykel Williams, those type of guys that you can do some of those things with that you don't need a lot of help from in terms of bringing extra numbers.
And Trev, I'm going to ask you about Ryan Williams. Now, look, he has struggled mightily, but for whatever reason, Ryan Williams goes into the phone booth and becomes Superman against Georgia. Could he do that again? And mentally, do we have an idea where he is?
Yeah, I wonder mentally and physically, you know, because throughout the season, he's a guy who has shown up pretty consistently on the availability reports. Never really listed as doubtful, you know, are out altogether. Mm-hmm. Not all that often, but, you know, probable. And we, you know what? We saw that from Jeremy Bernard last week. Yep. And you think, it's probably just something really minor and they got to have him on the report. But I didn't get the sense Jeremy Bernard was himself against Auburn the other night. It almost felt like Ryan Grubb was trying to work around some issues that maybe we won't know more about entirely until we get into January and February and this season is entirely over. Because there's no benefit for you to come out and say, yeah, we didn't target Ryan Williams, but, you know, he's got a separated shoulder that he's playing with.
Yeah.
There's no benefit for, you know, Kalen DeBoer or Ryan Grubb to broadcast that, you know, to Georgia or maybe college football playoff opponents coming up. That's the way I'm going to choose to view it until I hear something that's more specific or definitive. I think Ty Simpson's beat up.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we saw them during the game tending to him on the sideline. Looked like his low back type of situation he's dealing with. And it goes back to what we talked about to lead off the show. These two teams both, you know, this is the reward. This is the reward to get to play an extra game. And yes, it is for the SEC championship.
Yeah, really.
But you know what? I mean, Ole Miss is going through coaching transition, but I think Ole Miss is going to enjoy itself just fine from the couch. I think Oklahoma is going to enjoy itself just fine from the couch this weekend. And then if you're Alabama and Georgia and you don't win this game, you know, you're going to turn right around in a couple weekends and be playing for your college football playoff life.
That's right. Yes.
So you're not exactly going to have that typical between the SEC championship game and even a bowl game sort of gap. You know, it's going to come very quickly for the loser of this game. Maybe for both teams, even if Alabama wins, but I would think the loser for sure. It's going to be a quick turnaround and not a great opportunity to get really back to the health that you'd like to be at.
Well, and this really begs to the question of where we're going with championship games. Look, everybody wants to be, and particularly if you're in the SEC, you want to be able to say you're an SEC champion. But Trav, I think what I'm wondering is, are we going to be pretty close with the playoff? And look, playoff's not getting smaller. It's going from 12 to 16. So my question is, you know, could these leagues come up with another way of crowning a champion? I don't know if they necessarily get rid of the championship game. I know there's an incredible amount of money with it, but you're also getting an incredible amount of money with the playoffs. And again, just succinctly to say, I really do wonder in the next, I'm saying what, Trav, 3 to 5 years from now, will we crown a champion in an Alabama and Georgia won't have to play in a championship game?
Well, I mean, the SEC kind of put out something here in the last day or so about Alabama being the top seed in the SEC you know, the home team in the game against Georgia, which was, I think, another way of saying to the selection committee, you know, if Alabama does lose this game, you're basically going to be leaving out the regular season champ.
Right.
Is kind of the way that read. That's not too bad. That's pretty smart. That's pretty shrewd, I would say, by the SEC. If you're going to stump going into your conference championship game. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you're going to evaluate all the teams fairly, you almost have to stop the evaluation process after the 12th game. You have to stop the clock and do it from that perspective. The problem with that is then you turn the conference championship games into an exhibition.
Then
what's the real – I mean, it's the championship. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Alabama storied history, Georgia storied history, they always want to put another year up there on the wall where the section for the SEC champions – are concerned. It still resonates. It still carries a lot. But if it's a close call between even playing my starting quarterback, maybe in a game, I got to take that into consideration. And if that is essentially what you publicly refer to it as, almost like an exhibition game, then what does that do for your TV? You know, what does that do for your viewership? Right. Now, in the SEC, I think you could run all backups out there. The fans are still going to be locked in, which, you know, that isn't going to happen. But there's some rabbit holes that you might have to go down to sort of try to figure some of that out in terms of the legitimacy, preserving the legitimacy of the championship game versus, you know, what it can do from a damaging perspective to your league and to the specific teams.
Yeah, I agree. And again, well, we won't belabor the point here, but these things are certainly worth consideration. And look, it's only going to be – but I also understand the other side about that is you get some teams who badly need a win, like a BYU.
Yeah.
That if they win their championship game, they could certainly and would definitely be in the field.
Boy, that ACC office isn't pulling for Duke, are they?
No.
I'll be interested to watch the officiating in that ACC championship game.
That's a great point. Yes.
That's the third touchdown by Duke that's been overruled by a penalty, been negated tonight.
Yes.
It's the worst of luck. We got Hans here in the show chat, and he's of the belief that because of the Lane Kiffin departure to LSU, he thinks Ole Miss should have dropped to number 12. What do you think about that, Brent? And by the way, Ole Miss is at 6.
Yes.
So he would have liked them instead at 10. Boy, Ole Miss, and we're going to get into this more with the Lane Kiffin stuff. Were you surprised at Ole Miss not just turning to Pete Golding as the fill-in, but to go there with the permanent?
Yes.
You think that was a statement to the committee that, look, we're not viewing our guy, our next guy, as just a stand-in. He's our guy. You know, this is our guy for the next 10 or 15 years. They were trying to sell some conviction and belief in Pete Golding because of the perception, you know, they might have suffered from with Lane moving on to LSU.
Very possibly. Although it's hard, reality is, Trev, it's hard to argue with 11-1, right?
That's what it should be, but you never know, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But look, I mean, it's a very unfortunate situation. I know Lane Kiffin, and honestly, I guess really wanted to coach in the postseason. I think if Ole Miss and LSU were in different conferences, that probably would have happened. But again, it's not. But look, this is a extremely talented Ole Miss team. But Trev, you can't convince me that without Lane, that they will perform the same way they would have with Lane.
I think what helps Ole Miss with the committee is that you had all of this crap blowing around last Friday.
Yeah.
Going into the Egg Bowl, and they went out and took care of business in spite of all that.
Yes.
You know, they were clearly the dominant better team over Mississippi State from start to finish. I guess it's more problematic for me if teams at this point of the season are like Florida State a couple of years ago when you don't have Jordan Travis.
Yeah, right.
And it's really showing. Yeah. And it's showing that you the drop off between him and your next guy is really not a sustainable thing.
Yeah,
so right. I worry more about roster and personnel time of year.
Yeah.
And now we learn Charlie Weiss Jr. apparently gonna dial up the offense for the Rebels in the postseason. So I think that makes you feel a little bit better too. I just, you know, I think Ole Miss, you know, and also, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's a good thing that there's not the bigger gap between games, you know, like you can maintain some semblance of normalcy even without Lane Kiffin because you're kind of just staying in your vacuum now because you're going to play on the 19th or the 20th. It's not like you're not playing again until January 5th or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and look, the reality of this is, and you know how players are, and I'm sure you saw this like I did, not, let's just say not all the Ole Miss players were overwhelmed with grief that Lane left.
Well, so Lane likes to make it about Lane.
He does.
So I could see where some players would feel like, you know, it's maybe not as much about them as they would hope it would be. But, yeah, the situation is – it's certainly going to be interesting. Do I think Pete Golding is a slam dunk answer for the next 10 years? I don't believe that to be the case, but I think it makes sense what Ole Miss did,
sure it did.
In the short term for the sake of continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Pete's a really good recruiter. They have their NIL and their revenue distribution. Mm-hmm. They're funded, man. And so from that perspective, I do think it's sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, to your point, what's going to be crucial for Ole Miss after the playoffs is going to be who's going to come in at that offensive coordinator and play caller position.
Yeah,
that,
if you could have kept Weiss full time.
Yes.
You know, but you know, yeah, that's that. I think you hit it. I think with Lane, the biggest thing is the offense.
Yes.
You know, I don't think his day to day presence as a head coach is irreplaceable, you know, by any means. But boy, when it comes to offensive football, it's incredible to argue about what he.
No question.
He puts out there year in and year out. And with all the turnover that Ole Miss had and to still perform at that high of a level, that says a lot about him. No doubt about it. What about some of these other hires? I mean, obviously Lane was to LSU, was going to get all of the headlines. It was the headlines for a couple weeks. Florida, a very public, left at the altar type of situation. I don't know if it ever got that far, but there's been some interesting narratives, to say the least, when it comes to the Gators and Kiffin in retrospect. Some of it you wonder, is it just sour grapes? I think at the end of the day, Florida still would have hired Lane Kiffin, you know, for all of the quirks and all of the drama. And maybe Scott Strickland, the AD at Florida, wasn't crazy about Lane Kiffin. They were going to hire the guy if he was ready to sign on. I don't think there's any doubt about that. What do you think about the move from plan A to plan B, which was very obviously John Summerall at Tulane?
Well, I was very skeptical about this until talking with some people. Summerall did a really good job at Troy and Tulane. Now, Troy and Tulane are not Tennessee and Texas. Well, we understand that, but Summerall has been lauded and applauded. I thought it was interesting. I'm sure you did too, that Urban Meyer and Steve Spurrier were at the press conference. I mean, they may have been there anyway.
Yeah, it felt like they were his god. They felt like they were like Summerall's godparents.
Yeah, it really was.
Showing up for the christening. It had that feel to it, didn't it?
Yeah, no question about it. But I mean, he was certainly well received. He held himself at the well at the press conference. I don't think this is another Billy Napier situation. No. I think Summerall is a really smart football coach. I'm not saying Napier wasn't, but I think what Summerall is willing to do is he's willing to hire an offensive and defensive coordinator and let them do their job. Now, the interesting thing for you and I, along with this, is what Dave Colwell is doing here.
General
manager. Now, look, Dave Colwell has a up and down resume. I mean, he's been with the Eagles, but we know he was with the Jaguars. And during his tenure as the Jaguars, the record wasn't quite stellar, shall we say. But he's kind of a subplot. But I do think and look. Summerall had some roots up in, I know twin brother Brett, for me, he was up in that Huntsville area for a while, Trav, if you remember, during that time. So I think he would be doing well, but I found it very fascinating, like you did, that they call Wells on board too.
Yeah, that one fell a little flat with Gator Nation because there is a good bit of crossover and fan bases with the Jaguars and the Gators, as you might expect. So some of the Jaguar / Gator fans, that one didn't really resonate with. We'll see. I think you're seeing more and more of that, though.
Yeah, you are.
You know, Courtney Morgan, the GM at Alabama, he's on record. He's leaned heavily in recent months on Trent Baalke, former Jacksonville Jaguars general manager. So whether or not these guys are actually in those roles, Oklahoma has taken that sort of approach to the GM position. So it's a growing trend. There's no doubt about it. I'm like you. I thought Summerall hit all the keynotes at the opening press conference. It was kind of the antithesis of Billy Napier's opening press conference, which didn't land with most of Gator Nation a few years back. And, you know, look, he's a defensive guy, special teams guy. He's already apparently made a hire at coordinator on the defensive side with Brad White, right? Previously of Kentucky, who did a nice job up there in Lexington, and they have a background together, working together. So you like that, but it's Florida, Brent, and everything is going to be attracted to the offensive coordinator hire.
Yes. No question.
I think there's a lot of Gator fans that are happy that John Summerall isn't Billy Napier, isn't going to call his own plays, but they damn sure want a prolific, dynamic offensive coordinator. And I got one for you, Brent. And you know who I'm going to say, right?
Probably.
Bobby Petrino. I'm like Bobby's unofficial Jimmy Sexton.
I'm
always trying to get Bobby jobs or keep Bobby in a job. Bring in Bobby. Bring Bobby to Gainesville.
By the way, one Cade Bell has been mentioned around the SEC.
Really good. I'm not Kerwin's boy.
I'm not saying that around just Florida, but I've heard that name. And Trav, I'll tell you this, a lot of teams could do a lot worse than Cade Bell.
Yeah, I mean, he's on the ascent. You know, Kerwin's son, I think he was at Western Carolina and then Pitt. And he's done a nice job. So he that's definitely an interesting name to throw out there. But, yeah, I think it's off to a good start. I thought it was a good move by Summerall and or Florida to have Spurrier there, to have Urban Meyer there. It was a hire that didn't exactly move the needle after all of the flirtation and interaction with Lane Kiffin and that being the big gold medal type of hire. But I think that was a smart move. And, you know, we'll see. I think John Summerall's got – I do think, as he referred to himself, which was interesting in some ways, that he was built for that job. I do think he's got the juice. I do think he strikes me as someone who can handle the heat and the noise that kind of job encounters on a daily basis. It was interesting, Brent, because it felt like with Florida, Auburn, and Arkansas as – Lane did what he did with LSU, Plan B's had to go into effect, each of those jobs. Florida had to pivot to Plan B, John Summerall. And when Florida went John Summerall, it felt like Auburn had to pivot to Plan B, which was Alex Golish, perhaps. And because of that, Arkansas, which about a week ago felt like it had Alex Golish as its next head coach, had to pivot to Ryan Silverfield. Did you pick up on that? Did it feel that way to you too?
It seemed to
the dominoes again kind of played out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure the Arkansas faithful has accepted Silverfield yet.
That's my guy, man. Come on.
But in his defense, he did have he was 11-2 in 2024. Yeah. 10-3 in 2023.
Cotton Bowl. Yeah.
So, but look, they just, and look, one thing I've learned from you over the years, we've been working together since the early 90s. Everybody doesn't win the national championship, do they?
No.
And you've got, And look, this may be it. You know, yeah, some of the fans don't like it. It wouldn't it wasn't one of those hires that people are going to be jumping up and down about necessarily. But the reality is, Trav, if he gets them to what, 7-5, 6-6, and occasional 8-4, to me, that would be progress for them, would it not?
It would, but Arkansas strikes me as a fan base that doesn't want to hear about how hard that job is.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear about the labor pains. Just show me the baby.
Yeah.
In the words of the late, great Ron Meyer, the former head coach at SMU back in the Pony Excess days. I would think the last few years maybe have created more of an appreciation, even for the job Brett Bielema did. Forget about Bobby Petrino. Bielema had some of those type of teams at Arkansas, and he's since moved on to Illinois and done a good job with that program. All that I'm saying, Brent, is give Silverfield a chance.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying. The former Bulls Bulldog down in Jacksonville, Florida. But all these hires, Summerall, Will Stein, now that we're hearing at Kentucky, that's a sort of 180 move from our Stoops. People ask me for grades on these hires, and I always go with a C with these kind of hires, as in we'll see.
Yeah.
That's the only way I know how to grade it.
That's great. Love that.
Because I appreciate that Summerall has won at Troy and Tulane, but he followed guys won at Troy and Tulane. Neil Brown won at Troy, went to West Virginia and got fired. And I think today got hired by North Texas. Willie Fitz won at Tulane before moving on to Houston. So I liked everything I heard from guys like Golish yesterday, who apparently is going to be able to keep DJ Durkin. Those are the things I'm more interested in than anything else. Like Lane at LSU. Yeah, I know Lane's going to put a hell of an offense out there, but is Blake Baker staying? Baker is interviewing at Tulane for the head coaching job and maybe some other spots. So these next couple of weeks, until we get a better idea about staffs, to me, it's just impossible to offer definitives. Like, Golish, I know the offense at Auburn is going to be improved over what Hugh put out there this year. How could it not be?
Really?
But I think it's kind of a Josh Heupel hire right now because of the connection between Heupel and Golish. And Heupel, relative to the guys before him for the previous 15 years or so, has done a really nice job. But at the end of the day, a season like this season for Tennessee, what, 8-4 at the end of the day? And who did Tennessee beat this year, though?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a really light 8-4. So, you know, it's easy to look at Auburn right now and say, well, if he goes 8-4 next year, that's a big improvement over 5-7. That will be a positive if Auburn does that next year. But kind of like where Heupel's at Tennessee now. Yeah, you got us to 10-2. You know, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, there's and as you said earlier, not everybody's going to win the national championship, but fan bases like Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, Alabama, you know, Georgia, they don't want to hear that.
And let me say real quick. Now, look, I know Mark Stoops didn't win a national championship, but he leaves Kentucky as a program's all-time winningest coach.
Yeah.
And
should be a statue of the guy.
Absolutely. I agree with that totally. And also, Trav, he helped deliver two of Kentucky's four 10-win seasons.
Yeah.
Did things fizzle out? You could say that. But all in all, when you can leave – I know the last 2 years were tough. But he leaves that program in better shape than when he got there.
I would say so, although the way in which they were thunder-funked by Louisville, they went into that game, and we talked about this a little bit before the show too. You had a couple of teams like Auburn and Kentucky that were a win away from bowl eligibility. I think Auburn showed you in the loss to Alabama that that team should have easily been a bowl eligible.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have been 5-7. Mm-hmm. I think Kentucky, what we learned from the Vanderbilt game and then the Louisville game behind it, there really wasn't a choice. And even mm-hmm. with the $37 million buyout, which I'll say this for Mark Stoops, if we're going to pass out $30, $40 million buyouts, I'd feel a lot better about handing him that check for what he's done for Kentucky football than some of these other guys that have made a ton off of schools and really produced nothing relative to, you know, what the expectations probably are.
You know, I can see Stoops taking some time off.
Agree, CC.
And then coming back somewhere. Stu, one is, and there's nothing wrong with this. Stoops was never, hey, look at me type guy. So I really appreciate what he did over time.
Oh, no doubt. I could see him, you know, popping up at Youngstown State or something back home.
Sure.
In Ohio. Who the hell knows? Maybe he ends up at Penn State. Because I don't know who's going to coach Penn State.
No, not right now.
At this point. Kalani Sitake, I guess, the coach at BYU that has been the hot name here in the last few days. Sounds like now he's going to stay out there at BYU. Yes. Who knows?
Yes.
So there you go. And I know there's still the buzz about, well, what about Kalen? You know, I thought the win over Auburn would put a lot of that to rest. But until Penn State makes a hire, there's still going to be some of that bubbling just beneath the surface. Brent, that just about does it for the coaching aspect of this, unless you got anything you want to throw in there from that perspective.
Well, I think that's sufficient for now. And again, you know, we mentioned this a little bit earlier, and it tells you kind of where we are. I think in the game is the early signing period is this week. And I'm not going to say there's nothing about it going on at all, because you certainly see some interesting situations. And I feel for some of these, particularly these high school kids who may not get quite the day they thought they would. And I still hope they do, but it really tells you something kind of about the game and where we are right now, that signing period is kind of regulated as I'm not going to say, you know, second class situation, but because you've got to have players come through and you've got to restock with it, but unfortunately, maybe one day it will be, particularly if they move it on the calendar, but it doesn't hold the excitement that when you and I were we're doing radio and TV and print in it, that it used to.
Did you see, by the way, I think it was Lincoln Riley today, the USC head coach, he released like a 2-sentence statement that SC's not even having a signing day press conference.
Wow.
He said, just check back in January or something, you know, after the new year.
Yeah. Or after,
we'll have something.
Yeah. Or after the second signing day. Yeah.
Exactly. I found that pretty interesting. But as we wrap up here, this SEC championship game Saturday, it just feels like it should be a lot easier to pick Georgia. Mm-hmm. in this game than it actually is, because we've been here before, not with these exact teams, but 2021, 2023, Alabama and those Iron Bowls had to muster everything it could to beat inferior Auburn teams down at Jordan-Hare Stadium and then roll into Atlanta with the perception being anyway in those games or going into those games, Georgia's clearly – I think in 2021, it was the Georgia fan base, which you kind of understood it. And then even Georgia media, you know, was talking about this game, you know, little old Alabama and things like that. Of course, Alabama wins the game. Yeah. Alabama wins the game again. Similar situation in 2023. Here we are again in 2025, and Alabama already has a win over the Georgia Bulldogs, which is something else. I wonder how much the committee's putting into this
with
Alabama, regardless of outcome. Mm-hmm. Alabama loses the game Saturday. Well, they still have a win over a top three team in the country. Mm-hmm. And the only question is going to be, do they have two wins over a top three, top five team in the country? All right. How do you pick this game? You know, with everything we've seen, especially between these teams in that city, just in that state over the years.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing is, and look, I'm not saying the game is not necessary because we know how important being an SEC champion is. But at this moment, now things can change, but at this moment, it looks like both of them are going to be in. Yeah. So when you've got Trev, when you've got that, you don't have the sheer ferocity, as we used to hear it, of this game. And I mean, maybe that's a good thing for, and particularly for Alabama in this situation. But and look, I think when they kick it off, people will forget that, and it will matter because when being a conference champion is. But I still just wonder where this game is going down the road.
Yeah, I do too. And I think in this particular matchup, as we talked about earlier, some key injuries, Bobo for Georgia. We didn't even really talk about Josh Cuevas for Alabama and how big he is to what they do offensively, especially if Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard aren't exactly themselves. Isaiah Horton really stepped it up against Auburn last week. I think he's going to have to give that Alabama offense something similar. You know, you get back to the kicking game, things like that. Thorson and Woodring for Georgia, I think, are a very good tandem when it comes to punting and kicking the football. I think for Alabama last week, it was a very good sign.
Yes.
Connor Talty, the Alabama place kicker. Mm-hmm. Joked about that on the channel last week before the Iron Bowl that, half joking, I did really think that maybe Talty not kicking in Tuscaloosa last weekend would be a good thing, because that's where he apparently cannot kick.
Yeah, really.
I mean, going back to preseason scrimmages and listening to Kalen DeBoer, Connor Talty struggles to make kicks at Bryant Denny Stadium. Yeah. Seems like if you get him over to the practice facility, you get him somewhere else, it's not as much of a problem. So maybe he'll continue that. Punter for Alabama, Blake Dowd, he's so-so. I just think if Georgia wins this game, it'll probably have – I think a lot of the injuries are a wash in some ways.
I
think that – Georgia in the kicking game, and maybe with Branch in the way that Georgia can get him explosive plays off of some pretty easy touches. That's something Alabama didn't really show an ability to do last week against Auburn. I think those will be the differences. I think Georgia should win the game, but it's damn near impossible given the history of this matchup.
Right.
I've picked Georgia before and in games just like this. And Georgia's come up short. So it's just hard to pick Georgia, even though you feel like you should.
Yeah. I would agree with that very much. But it's going to be a very interesting week. Obviously, we'll know a little bit after, probably 12:30 or so on Sunday, who is going where. But again, this is likely the last 12-team playoff that we will have, I think, probably next year.
Next year, you think, going to 16?
Yes. Yeah, I really – and particularly, Trav, they had – and remember, they extended their time period for discussion until, mid-January or something like that. Might it be – TV may have whispered in their ear, boys, can we can we continue this discussion on for a few more weeks?
Yeah. And, you know, once they get it figured out, Disney, they've got direct deposit, you know, they can get those checks. Get those checks out and get that money can hit pretty quick these days. Yes. So there's not a lot to, it's not Western Union or anything like that when getting that money transferred these days is concerned. Anything else, Brent, before we get out of here live on a Tuesday night?
Well, give us a quick pops report. Anything of note? Trav, is he already calculating what he's going to get Nana for Christmas?
Well, he's driving that Diego Heisman train hard. Anytime I'm around him, like Thanksgiving dinner or anything, he is just, he's not a big jersey guy. You know, he doesn't wear jerseys, but if I bought him a Diego Pavia number two jersey, he might wear it.
He might.
At this point. That's funny. He was without incident on Thanksgiving Day.
Good.
We did give him a couple of apple pie jello shots.
Yes.
And even with that, he still kind of held it together. So Pops is doing, he's doing pretty well. You know, he's hanging in there. Good. 78 years old coming up in a couple weeks, which he'll tell you shocks him more than anybody. He has told, you know, he has told me, he has told his grandkids, you know, he's told us all that he figured he would have been shot dead by now. You know, he just didn't think there was any chance he would make it to 78. So that's Pops. That's pretty much Pops for you right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Brent, look forward to catching up next week.
Me too, brother.
I think we'll have a few things to talk about.
Oh, man. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Woo. Absolutely. So for Brent Beard, thanking you all once again for jumping on live with us on a Tuesday night. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, hit that subscribe button right now for Ryer on YouTube on YouTube. Also a thumbs up. If you would hit us with one of those, that would help us out tremendously as well. For Brent, I'm Travis. Thanks again. And until next week, so long, everybody.